Episode 176 von Win Today, Hockey O'Clock. Oliver David, Head Coach, Red Bull Salzburg. There's Champions Hockey League, there's the League Championship. If you could only have one, what would you go for? Winning a Champions Hockey League or recording a fourth championship in a row?
Fourth championship in a row. The league is, were you going to say why? I saw you jump to your microphone there, Martin. I'm ahead of you. Yeah. Day in, day out, you build a season. You're on a roller coaster. You try to be on one that doesn't make you throw up, doesn't make you get sick. You try to be on one that you can ride, a nice train ride that we consistently build towards a championship.
Win today, hockey. Oh, wow.
In diesem Augenblick wird jetzt richtig hitzig. Yeah, und die Scheibe kollert über die Linie.
Yeah. Mittendrin statt nur dabei.
Das ist unglaublich, was die hier zelebrieren.
Nice move, another nice move.
Oh, it's
there couldn't be a better way to kick off season number 5 of Win Today Hockey O'Clock. It's been a neat little tradition to have the championship winning head coach on this program. Obviously, we couldn't have him at the tail end of last year's podcast season, but to kick things off, it is the reigning championship winning head coach of the Win Today Ice Hockey League. He's, of course, the Red Bulls, Oliver David, and Coach David. So thankful that you're taking the time, jumping onto the show and being a first guest of the new season.
Vielen Dank, Martin.
Coach, there's a little bit of pressure on you because normally a season of Win Today Hockey O'Clock got a trailer and an announcement when the new season starts. This year, I thought, well, let's just start the season and I'm entirely banking on your star power to make this season go through the roof too. So I hope you're ready for what's incoming.
I mean, all I've heard about is pressure. It's nonstop. So thanks for that, nice reminder to kick off the podcast interview. I'm not sure if you can be in this business and do these kinds of things if you're not trying to rise to the challenge of being challenged, of facing the pressure head on. So I think it's very much in the Red Bull DNA and the identity of everybody around here that we meet challenges head on. I can even use the visual very much of an actual bull with the horns down and the Red Bull logo and going right for it and going until the sun goes down. And, you know, that's we try to embrace the identity here and live up to it as best we can. So bring on the pressure, and I'll work on my blood pressure and my heart rate and some meditating and some breathing exercises to keep myself stable.
I have to be honest, I was really looking forward to doing this with you and kicking the new season off with you. And there's so much interest in hockey again, and we can all feel it that the season is coming closer and that we finally have relevant games to talk about again. And there have been so many fans that wrote and sent questions along. Obviously, huge interest in the Red Bulls and everything that's been going on this past offseason. I hope I can include as many questions from interested fans and users and listeners out there as possible. But then again, I know of the time constraints. A lot's going on already within the Red Bulls organization. You've already had your first exhibition game. You're going to play at the Red Bull Salutes this upcoming weekend. There's Champions Hockey League games that are upcoming. League action starts in a little more than a month. So hopefully I'll keep this within an hour, but still packed with a lot of information. And what I'm curious about is you're heading into your second year as a head coach. At the very same time last year, you were a rookie head coach for senior or adult hockey, quote unquote. What's the biggest difference for you heading into year two when compared to last year?
Yeah, the biggest difference is very, very clear for me. It's a feeling. It's walking around. We're at the Red Bull Academy. I think if people don't know about our academy that we share with the Fußball Academy for FC Salzburg and also Liefering, it is world-class. And I don't think it's open to the public to visit, so I can't say you should come check it out. But if you ever do have a chance to visit or yeah, maybe play games here, it's worth coming to see. But it's a first-class facility, or really a campus worldwide, I would say. So yeah, walking around, seeing the staff again, players showing up. We have our training camp at this Red Bull Academy, at our Red Bull Academy. To this point, basically, I think every preseason. In the future, we have some plans that maybe to go offsite for some different team bonding situations. But second year on the campus, we spend the whole month here. We don't move into the Volksgarten until September, 1 week before Champions League. And the vibe and the energy and the organization of our staff, from everything, to be honest, from everything from daily schedules, monthly calendars, the feeling of practice, the design of practice, the off-ice training, all of these things, for me personally, are on some level a totally different level. We reached a higher standard. So, for example, my head was spinning coming into Red Bull, and as you mentioned, it was also my first year as a pro head coach. I've been in pro before, previously in Switzerland. And I've been a head coach almost, yeah, basically my whole career. But pro, it was my first crack at it. And I was nervous. I had anxiety. I wanted to meet the expectation, obviously, of continuing to win on a personal level, also a professional level. And I did feel that pressure. The pressure word comes up again. A lot of it is self-induced. I put it on myself to meet a certain standard that I hold for myself, but also externally, coming into Red Bull and coming in after very successful seasons and a successful club in general for 20 years. You're aware of it. I'm not going to lie and say it's not something that wasn't on my mind every day last season. And you have to find a way to work with it and make it work for you. And that was very difficult for me last season, to learn the team, to learn the league, to learn the country, to learn pro hockey, to learn a staff. I didn't bring anybody with me that I knew previously. Really, to be honest, I'm not looking for any sympathy here or pat on the back or anything like that, but basically every category of a head coach's job was new to me last year. Every category, the off-ice and everything. So this year, 100% different feeling, 100%, much more established, as I mentioned. So really looking forward to it. We still have the same expectations moving forward. But on a day-to-day operation these first couple weeks, I would say the word is much, much smoother and much more comfortable in a good way.
First of all, I really appreciate your honesty. Not a lot of people that openly talk about anxiety that sometimes comes with pressure. And of course, with Red Bull, there are always high expectations, and that might lead to pressure. And that obviously has led at times to anxious moments or episodes. And we'll try to dissect last year's campaign a little bit, which was not dissimilar to a roller coaster ride. There were lows, there were incredible highs, obviously, with you hoisting the trophy in Game 7 on Klagenfurt Ice. But when we talk about those anxiety moments or the times when it did strike you, how did you try to deal with those moments? How did you get yourself out of the anxiety hole, quote unquote?
Yeah, I mean, I think something that might not be considered or thought of as quickly as maybe we would assume it is for the players. Something like, I don't know, let's say the word high performance or healthy. Yeah, healthy working environment. Those are kind of two things it's two phrases I hold in my mind at all times, I would say. Two phrases I come back to during every day is you know, what is a high functioning, high performing environment, and what is a good working environment with the staff, just the surroundings. Those things, I'm not sure the general public thinks so quickly about matters to coaches just as much as it matters to players. We demand high performance, or we demand, yeah, some sort of standard from our players, from the most basic passing tape to tape in a warm-up drill to winning a championship and everything in between. And when it doesn't happen, yeah, we act a certain way or we jump to certain conclusions, and we expect that these things get solved and the people find a way to solve them. And for coaches, it's the same. And for me, when I'm struggling, I fall back on how am I treating myself? How am I sleeping? How am I thinking? Is it productive thinking or unproductive thinking? Just in general, even before facing the team. Yeah, the thinking and the sleeping and the actions, basically, about creating a work environment that supports coaching at a high level. I was not a good student. I didn't put in the effort in those years in school when maybe I should have a little bit more. But luckily, somewhere along the way, I really developed a love of learning and discovery and being creative and thinking of ways in this way to your question, to come through anxiety. It's something that if I'm feeling it, I'm 46 now, I have a pretty good understanding of my body and my mind. If I'm feeling it, I'm able to go through a process in a self-questioning process to get back to a healthy space. And again, it starts with thinking. If I'm thinking too many bad thoughts, if I'm pointing fingers out, I figure out why am I feeling that way and why am I pointing fingers at players? Why am I pointing fingers at opponents? Why am I placing blame elsewhere? Is this bringing me anxiety? And I don't have a clear example, but I go through an internal process to come back to neutral and hopefully come back to a place of high performance. This does not happen easily. For sure, there's breathing situations, sleeping I've mentioned, but really watching your thoughts, because your thoughts lead to your actions. And you don't want to be apologizing for your actions too many times in the day. This is normal for anybody that has a family, for anybody that works in maybe a big corporation or a part of a team. You don't want your thoughts to lead to bad actions that you have to apologize for. And I have these ideas in my head, and I try to go through that. Once I have the self-awareness, something is wrong, to go through the reflection process. And again, I apologize for not having a clearer process to point to as an example, but I would encourage everybody, when you have that feeling in the body, think about what you're thinking about and really take a step back and try to come back to neutral as best you can. And there's plenty of different tactics and tools you can find. But the aim here is that we have a very healthy working environment. It's a hard bullseye to hit, and that our players have the support and the resources around from the coaches as well, that they can be high performers. And if I'm not right, then it's not going to go well. And I have the support of our management to do the things I think I need to do to be prepared, just as we support the players to do what they need to do to be prepared. And I hope that's not special to Red Bull, but I know that I feel pretty privileged to be in an environment that supports these kind of processes.
Appreciate you talking so openly about it, and as cliche as it sometimes might sound, but it's never wrong to really go back to the basics and have a process in place and develop the process. And obviously it helped you through an interesting season that culminated on April 19th. Before we talk about that day and eventually what happened, I want to take you back to the last 10 seconds of game action and everything that unfolded on Klagenfurt ice that day. Let's listen in together.
Spiel 7 ist durch. Salzburg zum dritten Mal in Serie Meister und damit eine Dynastie.
Now, what listeners out there can't obviously see is what I just showed you. You were able to watch the video again, and it ended with you after Salzburg won the championship and the game had ended with you rubbing your eyes. Was that just a coincidence that the cameras caught you rubbing your eyes, or was that the moment where it finally sunk in that you were the championship winning head coach?
Yeah, I think it was probably that moment. I couldn't hear the audio, so maybe the listeners could hear, but the visual, I'm a visual learner anyway. So for you to show me the video brought back emotions, and I didn't need to hear the audio to be honest. I could see what I could see what I felt, and yeah, that's that was the moment where it's like, man, this is. You know, it's really unbelievable, to be honest. Like, unbelievable. It's everybody says unbelievable. It's a kind of a trendy catch-all word at this point. But I have to say, it was not believable. It was unbelievable to be in that position, and not because I didn't believe in the ability of the players and our staff, but because when it happened and all of the ups and downs that really, as you mentioned, a roller coaster, we say in coaching, try to stay off the roller coaster. You know, our job is not to thrill. Our job is to maintain consistency and keep the train moving and not be too high and too low like a roller coaster. But every season is a roller coaster ride. That's why we use those terms about roller coasters. And this one, maybe more so. I credit the players. There's not really anything I can say that would do it enough, give them enough credit for how they were able to receive me. To try to put some new ideas into place, but also keep the foundation, the identity of Red Bull that's long established before me. There were a lot of behind the scenes, there were a lot of ups and downs because things, you know, when somebody new comes in, I was the only new person and two import players that we ended up changing and then had two different ones. During the playoff run in Nico Meyer and Drake Rimshaw, we added late in the season, but I was the only new staff member. That's another one of the categories I was saying coming in. Basically, every category that can be difficult or tough for a new head coach. One of them was I was the only new person on a very, very, very senior, experienced staff and championship staff. And the players had the players had to deal with that. They had to deal with me not knowing certain things, me having to learn things that maybe they haven't had to experience from a coach before. And they did it all. They did it all professionally. They, what I felt is, I can say this actually sincerely and honestly, what I think I did well last year, maybe the thing I did the most well, was not have everybody adapt to me, but me come into the team. Once I felt that the players were willing to receive me and the staff and everybody around, I think that it was my job to adapt to our team, not my way, to our way, ways that were established before me, and ways that I thought would help us win. So I can put it another way. The way to winning last year was not me coming in and changing what has been done, but kind of building on top of and me personally adapting to a way of working. And that's, that was very difficult. You can imagine, I came so excited, man. I came with my ideas from everything I've done, all the learning I've had. I've been coaching a very long time. I've been coaching since 19 years old, to be honest. So, you know, almost 20 years, high level, winning everywhere, working with NHL coaches, being on great staffs, making finals in every league I've ever been in, making the finals and doing spectacular things, coming to Red Bull and thinking, how can I add to this team? How can we win a third time? And as we started going, the real way was going to be me taking a step back and putting my ego behind and me opening up and joining the team and watching these guys go with the game that we play and figuring out how I can support them.
Just quickly want to intersect here, because last time a championship winning head coach of the Red Bull Salzburg organization, not named Oliver David, was on the show, it was Matt McIlvaine, and he talked extensively about the brotherhood and the bond that they created and the good things that they had going in the locker room and obviously on the ice too. He left as a two-time championship winning head coach, and you come in, and with everything that you described, how big was the temptation at times to go, well, I kind of have to put my fingerprints on this, and how difficult was it at times to indeed take that step back? Something that not a lot of people, I'd say, would be able to do.
Yeah, as I mentioned, I think if there's anything that I got somewhat right, somewhat did a good job of, it was get out of my own way and put the needs of all the people that I'm supposed to be heading up or directing as the head coach before my own. And I'm not saying I did that well every day, but when I came to this epiphany or this realization, like, okay, this is what's going to work here. I think, you know, I love the Olympics, and we just finished 2 days ago, and Emma Hayes comes to the, she's a very good coach. I read a lot about her. She's from the UK, 12 years at Chelsea, winning with the women's team at Chelsea in the English Premier League, for the women's league. And she joined the US national team, and they just won the gold. And I recently read something about her, actually yesterday, that I took something away from that resonated with me, that I kind of relate to. And it's this idea that It's not about you. It's about what does this team need, and how are we going to get this team to win in this case? And, you know, they were a gold medal contender, and we were a championship contender last year. How are we going to get this team to win? And it can never be about one person. You know, it can't, in her way to do it is it's not about her system. It's not about implementing a system. The difference is in the way that I approached it, it was about staying with the system and learning about the system and the identity and the culture, as you mentioned, that they have a strong bond here, the culture of the players. And when I came to this, I would argue that, to use your term, putting the fingerprints on it, we won the damn thing. That's enough fingerprints. You know, that's enough to put your name on something and be a part of something. And the way that you do it is going to look different every season. It's going to look different for every personality. Every coach has a different way. We say in coaching, there's many different ways to win. There's many different ways to play the game. We won. And that's more than enough for me. And yeah, and I'm learning from that process. And now we move forward building, I would use the word evolving. You cannot keep winning and stay the same. So naturally, I would say on a professional level, I cannot stay the same. I have to take coaching steps. I have to take different actions in the team this year to keep them motivated. I'm not the new guy anymore, for example. We have established a working way and a way to go forward. And we do plan to implement new ideas and challenge the players to not stay in one direction, you know. So these are hopefully just evolutions of a really good group of guys that we find new ways to keep them wanting to go for more.
There's so many interesting things in what you just said, and maybe you can take us on the inside of this evolution, because in year two, obviously, the fingerprints will look different, to just remain with the figure of speech, than in year one. And another interesting part is that there was unusually low turnover. Normally, championship winning teams get raided like left and right. A lot of players are leaving for better leagues, bigger leagues, greener pastures, but there's only three new people on the team and the core remains the same. The core remains intact. What will be your focus points for the upcoming year? How do you try to keep that evolution going, and in what direction is it going?
We did get players did leave for different opportunities within the league, and I think that points to, they were young players, and that points to the competitiveness of the league. I'm very, very, very aware of the actions of the of our opponents and the clear signs of nobody's going away. It's actually the opposite, that we're gonna start going forward and pushing, and we want to win championships. I think there's a lot of contenders actually that we have to figure out how to continue challenging and continue getting the better of. And it's honestly, last year was so hard, man. It was so hard. The level was much better than I thought it was going to be. I didn't have a lower expectation. I just didn't have an expectation. I didn't know. I think experience is oftentimes the best teacher. And now that I've experienced, it's not going to be so surprising to me when we see Graz show up, when we see Bolzano show up, when we see KFC show up, when these guys, even Asiago is loading up and has different things they're doing. Everybody, they're not, nobody wants to stay at the bottom, and everybody wants to stay at the top. So these things are on my radar, really, really on my radar. And I think in terms of fingerprints and evolution and how we do our day-to-day work, the idea that the hockey team is why we all exist, and we're all here to support the hockey team. Why would you change something? If it's not broke, don't fix it. The idea of there's this self-preservation idea in humanity, or in the ecosystem of the world. Self-preservation. We got to stay here. We got to preserve. This is what we are. This is what we do. This is what we know. And then there's the idea of evolution. And nothing stays the same, and everything has a cycle in a period of time. And one thing that always comes to mind when we talk about this, and I think the fingerprints is a nice thing to have going, the nice thread to have going through this conversation. One thing that always comes to mind with how will we evolve, how will we change or adapt and stay with these very, very competitive opponents next season, on a team level, I'm talking about on a team level. Hans-Peter Steinacker is a two-time Olympic Austrian sailing champion. He is a Red Bull, not an athlete anymore, but still part of the Red Bull cosmos. He sits on the board for the Alinghi Red Bull racing team that's going to be in the America's Cup starting next month in Barcelona, for example. One of the cool things we get to do here at Red Bull is meet people like that. So we started last preseason meeting Mr. Steinacker in Monfalcone at the Red Bull sailing base that they're building up in Italy. And then the thing that he said that was just pure gold to me is, he just said it as part of his presentation, is we won two Olympic gold medals. And after that, we knew we couldn't stay the same. And he invented a sail, the fabric for the sailboat. He invented the sail and changed I don't know enough to talk more about it, but basically the fabric and the design. So maybe from, let's say, cotton or to a synthetic or a Kevlar or something like this. And they lost and they lost and they lost and they lost and for a year and 2 years. And then it started to come around. So basically the idea that you have to evolve, you have to find ways in the surroundings to continue supporting the hockey team. How can we speak better? Is there a better meeting time? You have to check all of these items, the food, the travel, anything that you can control to better support the players with their input, thinking ahead for them, even if they're not thinking about it. These are the ways that hopefully we can continue putting our fingerprints on the team that we think will continue helping us win, that help lead us to winning. Now, the big, it's not a risk, but you still can come back to, what are you talking about, man? Like, it's not broken. Don't fix it. Okay. But in the house or anywhere, the more efficient that you can be, the better your family's going to run. The more efficient you can be as a coach with a meeting, with the travel, with a practice plan, the better your team is going to run. So we just constantly take this sale idea, take this idea of efficiency and evolution, and really try to look at every way we can do it. I would say another guy popped in my head just now, the most famous guy that does this in high level sport, his name is Sir Brailsford. He works for Ineos, and they just took over Man United. And he's very famous for this getting 1% better every day. And he did it with the British cycling team before the 2012 London Olympics, and they had all these world records and they won more gold medals than they ever had. And it's just, that's the basic thing, is how can we improve in what area? Don't underestimate the smallest possible thing you can look at. It's not about control. It's not about dictating. It's about finding an improvement that feeds the player's ability to be high performers. That's where we currently, in very early on in this season, currently looking at our processes to better support the players.
Well, looking at the current makeup of the Red Bulls and the roster heading into the camp and heading into the season, already mentioned the core remains intact, remained together, a couple of key additions. But what stands out is that a lot of incredibly experienced players, but a lot of them also on the quote-unquote wrong side of 30. There's 30-year-old Thomas Raffel. Granted, he's probably the most unique physical specimen that we've had in recent memory in Austria. There's 36-year-old Andrew Rowe, all the defensemen that were brought back are now a year older. Dennis Robertson in his age 34 year, Ryan Murphy in his age 32 year. The goaltenders, both either being 30 or approaching 30. Where's that fine line for you of having experienced veterans and then also having that kind of youth infusion that everybody needs?
Yeah. So, I mean, we have our academy system that I think that's one area that we can utilize better. I've only been here 1 year. I'm not speaking about any situation before me. I'm just speaking about last season. And this is the efficiency thing again, and another word would be giving the opportunity to the young guys in our academy that want the opportunity, that are ready for the opportunity. One way we can do better from last season, and that falls on me, that falls on the learning, the understanding what the academy system and our team represent, what they mean in the whole Red Bull ice hockey world. And what that pathway should look like. So that was part of my learning last year. You mentioned Thomas and the older defensive core that we have. Player development is a big focus of ours this season, even when you're speaking about Thomas on that side and Luca Auer coming out of the academy and joining our team and a couple of years ago on that side of the scale, a 20-year-old and a 38-year-old. Player development is covering all of those guys. Thomas, I would assume, but I'm still going to say it, that it's clear to everybody. Thomas, as you mentioned, is a physical specimen. He's exceptional. I watch him every day in training, on and off the ice. He is as hungry as, I mean, I don't have anything to compare it to because he's won 7 times. You know, I've been to 3 bit finals and won once last year, but he's as hungry as someone who hasn't won. He's as hungry as someone who has won 7 times. It doesn't make sense that you should be that hungry to win an 8th time. It's another level of desire. I can tell you, the way that he trains, the way that he lives, he's not interested in only winning one more time. That's clear in his body language and his actions and how he goes about living his personal life as well. That guy is really in it to win it. He's really all in. So he's included in player development. He wants to win. He wants to get better. He wants to find a way to keep playing at a high level and contributing to our team. So the older guys on the scale, they all take from Thomas's example, I would say. They all have their own hunger and desire to win again. They all train in our Red Bull way of training, which I don't want to get into, but I partly because I'm not an expert enough to talk about it, but it's on a level that clearly would rival any off-ice program in the world. Like, honestly, it's on another level. And sometimes I can't believe the guys are able to do everything that's asked of them. And then on the other side of that, the fact that they are doing everything that's asked of them, and then you see the output on the ice, it's like, man, this is exceptional. This is high performance. So Luckily for us, we have that infrastructure, and these older guys are open to development and open to the amount that's asked of them off ice. And I would say, in Thomas's case, in Chase Genoway's case, these 38, 37-year-olds, they're really more like 30-year-olds. They're being well preserved, and they really, really take care of themselves. So I'm being optimistic in saying this, but I don't think in our environment that age is as much a factor, the older age I'm talking about, as it could be somewhere else, because of the mentality of the players that we have here, the willingness of them to do the work, and the hunger to keep winning. It's so clear if you were around for a day. I invite you to be around for a day and feel the energy if you ever want to come, Martin. But and then imagine that for the Luca Hours and the Lucas Tallers and these guys having that as the example. I mean, I didn't have that as an example. I had to learn everything in my life the hard way. These guys have the most coolest example, role models, teammates to look up to. And I think that feeds that culture that we have. And we've got to do as good a job as we can getting the academy players through our team and through our Red Bull world. And that's one of the big focuses this year.
I want to talk about the academy and the structure of hockey within Red Bull in a moment, but I just want to quickly go back to exhibition games that have obviously already started with Salzburg playing their first one this past Friday against Zug from Switzerland, and a couple more exhibition games coming up, and then it'll be Champions Hockey League and league action. How do you approach exhibition games, apart from the fact that a couple of players were rested and didn't play on Friday? But is it like a gimme to assume that one of the premier lines in recent memory with Peter Schneider, Benny Minissner and Thomas Raffer is going to remain intact and remain together for large chunks of the year? Or is exhibition also the time for you to try to come up with new line combinations and maybe see what sticks?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I can say in my opinion, Raffel, Nissner, and Schneider have proven if we talk about, you know, a normal office setting, and I'm a manager of a department at a company somewhere, and these three employees are being, you know, judged on their, I don't know, meeting a quota. Meeting their sales performance goals or something like this. Those are easy meetings. Those three guys have proven their performance. They've proven their value. They show no signs of stopping. So this is very much, they've earned the right to continue playing together. And they are a top line. I think we just have to base it on the last game of the season. And they were the top line in the game for me when it mattered most. And they'll start that way again. In the preseason, actually, I'll take one thing back. So having said that, there's many philosophies on how to line build and how to use your depth chart. And that's where hockey gets interesting. How does Philip and Lance, how does he build his first line? How does he build, what's the fourth line? Some of this is, yeah, contracts you have. There's some things that are not in your control. So you piece things together as creatively as you can. But line building is very, very, very interesting to me. And this is one of the areas I think I still have a passion to learn about. I'm always interested in how people are building their lines and how they're adjusting, and not just in game, but okay, that player left for a different league, as you mentioned earlier. Who are they replacing him with? Is it the same style player, or do they have a new look first line? And why did they decide to go with a new look first line? So that line, Nissner's line, clearly we start from there. We keep the same for the reasons I mentioned. We then go down our depth chart and we say, okay, how do we want a second line to look? Do we have the availability to build it that way? Who do we have internally that can fill those positions, third line and fourth line and so on? So I prefer that when we find, long time ago, I came up with a term that I've always used. It's just a stupid thing I say in my head, but buddies and brothers. When you can find players that have an experience together, that inbuilt chemistry, a history together, that's kind of the buddies thing. And you try to build a line where you at least have that two-man chemistry, a duo, a two-man team. And the third guy, if you're lucky, you get a trio. And that's what I think we have in our first line. We have a clear power forward, we have a clear playmaking center, and we have a right-handed sniper in Schneider. We have those positions established. So we go through that internally, then we look externally at what is available. Can we build it in the way that we want to? Oh, we can. Awesome. We go out and we do it. And if we can't, then we, in the preseason, would start to try out things, as you mentioned. Do we juggle lines? Do we change? Do we try to get different looks? If we don't have something we're confident in from last season, then we will piece it together throughout the preseason. And as you mentioned, Raffel and Schneider and Toller was sick. That's why he didn't play. Raffel and Schneider was a maintenance thing, not by their doing, by my doing. I chose to take them out. They want to play all the time. So it's just a maintenance thing in just my feeling for the situation, and also the Olympic qualifiers coming up for those guys and different things like that. So if there's guys taken out, then we will try looks that maybe you haven't seen so regularly. But the basic is we have our template, we have our depth chart. Can we bring in from the academy Philip Krenning, for example? And can he do it? Is he ready to do the job? Not based on performance, just maturity level, character-wise, these kind of things, where he's going to be successful if we bring him. Philip Sinn was a good example from last year from the academy. He integrated very well into our team. So we first look there, and then we look at the player types and what we have. And as I said, again, can we get on the market what we want to build, the type of identity we want in that line? So we have line identities, and we've been able to basically, yeah, we haven't played any games yet, so it's easy to say no, but basically fill the identities as we wanted to.
I mean, the holy grail of putting together a hockey team is having four lines that mix and mesh very well, and a lot of people have thought about this and have talked about this, and it's so interesting to hear your philosophy on that, and especially when they are about to become buddies on the ice and on a line. What are, I mean, apart from the on-ice production, what are telling signs for you that a line combination that you're trying out seems to be working? Is there a secret to it?
I think when the line wants to play together, there's a famous from Miracle, our nice American hockey movie. I'm not being biased here, but it's a pretty cool movie with Kurt Russell, Disney movie, made 20 years ago now, I think. But Miracle has a cool scene, the Conehead line. The three guys walk into the coach's office and they basically finish each other's sentences. And of course, it's dramatized for a movie, but this is a nice idea. When three guys come to the rink and do the warm up together, when they see each other and they get energy from each other, when they go into a practice and they, you know, if we have a 5-on-5 situation, they compete really hard and against the other line when they want to win, when they want to stay together, when guys come into the coach's office and says, I really like playing with that guy, I really like our line right now, you know, that kind of thing. All of these are signs that there's a dynamic behind, a human nature behind that maybe they can't even understand, but you feel it subconsciously. Maybe like, yeah, meeting for me, my wife, or for somebody else, their partner, and you know, oh man, this is not going to be another a normal girlfriend or boyfriend like I had before. There's something else happening here. Line building, or guys feeling it, guys vibing with each other and having a chemistry is a real thing. So that's where that buddies and brothers, when you can find guys that have that history, it's inbuilt. It's already baked in there. I've always had success with brothers. A weird thing, it wasn't on purpose, but we had, in my time in Dubuque in the USHL, I think we had 4 sets of twins. It just happened that way. It wasn't even just brothers, it was like twins. And they didn't even always play on the same line, but if one was a defenseman, one was a forward, they were on the ice at the same time, you can imagine. Not like the Sedin level connection, but you can imagine. There is something there that you... I'm not doing a great job describing, but that's also the point, that you can't really describe it. It's just there. It's like a family. You have a connection without words. You have a connection when you use certain words. You know what they mean between the two of you or the family unit. So that's when you know you have something, when you get 3 guys that share a brain, that buy into the identity of their line, and then they talk about it and they put their own fingerprint on how they want to go about making the biggest contribution they can to the team. So I'll give you an example. Oli Vukovic, super skilled. I watch him every day. He snipes from everywhere. He can stick out. He can change direction. Really beautiful skater. Super fast. He has a real desire, and rightfully so, to score more, to produce more. He hasn't had a lot of goals in recent memory, and he plays in a Red Bull system that requires certain things outside of scoring. One of the best things that happened last season is I mishandled my relationship with Ali, and it came a point in time where a really hard decision had to be made on who to scratch, because we finally were healthy, and how to go about things. And I had not communicated with him before like I should have, and he was the one that I scratched, not for lack of performance or something like this. That just was the guy, the odd man out in that moment. He handled it like a pro. From there, we kind of reconciled. I said to him where I thought I didn't do a good job coaching, or even just, learning more about him and that kind of thing, coming into a new team, misunderstanding him a little bit and his desire to play a certain way. Let's fast forward to the second half of the season, all of the playoffs. That guy is so committed to what we do that we can build a line around him. We can build our whole identity around him. He has the internal struggle, which I understand, to get on the scoreboard more. But what he really is, where the value that he brings to our team, is he is the embodiment of our identity. And when he shifted to, you know what, I'm going to refocus myself. I'm not going to focus on that shiny stuff, even though I know I can do it and I want to do it. I'm going to do what the team needs. When he did that, man, it's like he starts every game, him and Hochhofler, and it was Paul Huber at the time. When I even just say those words or those names, I get goosebumps. I get like a toddler. I get a warm blanket. Like when those guys are on the ice, I feel safety. I feel secure, you know, and that is like, that's something, you know, when you got guys like that, and that's how you know You know when you know. That's how you know when, man, that guy may, okay, Ali's willing to do that for us. And, you know, and he's done that in the past as well. I knew that about him. I hadn't seen it till the second half of the season. I blame myself for some of that, not communicating more clearly with him. But that's what we have special here. And that's what I mean about building an identity or a line, and he's one we can clearly build around. If we talk about Nisner's line and Thomas and Schneider, we're going to have a whole different story of why they work and why they are also our identity in many ways. So this kind of thing, we have different personalities in the line.
And I guess Ali Vukovic being a perfect example of why it's not always goals and assists that matter, because he brings so much to the table and deserved it. So he's a tremendous player in this league and on your team. When we try to have apply a broader scope, it's an interesting place where the Red Bull Salzburg organization is sitting at right now, because obviously there's the academy. They're tremendously skilled young players up and coming. There's Salzburg. There's Munich. Munich obviously being at the center stage of things in a couple of weeks' time, because a new SAP Garden in Munich will open. The Buffalo Sabres will play an exhibition game against the Red Bulls of Munich. Don Jackson still very much involved in helping hockey at Red Bull. How do you try to handle things when knowing, on one hand, there's the academy that needs to have players and a certain output, and you winning a championship, but also developing, that there's Munich that obviously requires highly skilled players too. How do these different entities all intersect, and what's maybe the broader vision for Red Bull hockey in a couple of years' time?
Yeah, man, that's, we need
loaded question.
Yeah. Not just loaded, but it's a really good question. And I don't know if people can tell, but I don't have a problem talking and going long form answers. That's an even longer form answer.
But you were born for this podcast, you know?
Yeah. I try to unpack that. The first thing that came to my mind is in learning, I'm learning about this now. That's why it came to my mind. In learning, there's this idea of, if we draw a line from understanding to learning. So for example, a player might understand something, they go to the board, they can draw it, they can recite everything, they can see it on video, they understand it, but then the game comes and pressure comes and expectations of performance come and they don't do it. It's not in long-term memory, they're not accessing it. They haven't showed that they learned it. They've showed that they understand it. This is to the academy, to our team, to Munich, this kind of, again, this line. There's this transfer that is very in this, I'll go back again to this understanding and learning. The transfer to learning from understanding is the million-dollar question. Like, how do you, who, I mean, it's in science, it's in everything. Like, everyone is trying to answer this question. How do we transfer understanding that they actually learn it? You know, and how do we know when they learned it? How do we transfer from the academy to our team where we can keep winning? How do we transfer from maybe our team to some guys that have the desire to play in Munich and move through this? This transfer is player development. This transferring from the academy to our team is maybe something you can never get right by every player. It's no academy system in the world, not even my favorite Fußballmannschaft, Man City and Pep Guardiola and these type of people. Everyone going through their academy is not graduating to their first team. It's they have even lower numbers than ice hockey academies, to be honest. But they also sell players, and there's different model. But anyway, how do we do it? Who do we do it with? It come back to who's ready and who fits in the team, who deserves the opportunity in player development in our greater company of Red Bull. When you talk about employee development, personal development, career development, player development, when you talk about development, the number one most important thing or the number one most important person is you. You have to take ownership of your development. If you're 16 and you want to get a chance, you have to take ownership, personal responsibility, and hold yourself accountable to doing the things necessary to get into our team. The opportunity comes when you're ready. If it comes before you're ready because there's a need or you're a super, super high talent, then we have to manage that situation. But the pathway is there. It is not going to ever work for everybody. And the answer to how to do it best, I don't have. I'm learning it. I'm studying it. We talk about it all the time. But we do absolutely create the pathway, and trying to constantly challenge ourselves to find new ways or better ways to give a pathway to the team. So I've mentioned his name already, Philipp Krenning, young German player or German citizen playing here in our academy. We took the decision that he is ready for the opportunity to fight for a spot in our team. Currently, he's playing with Mario Huber and Andrew Rowe, for example, in the preseason. So veteran center, super awesome. Matter of fact, his name has super in it, Super Mario Huber, I call him, a guy from Austrian national, super experienced. We surround Krenning with him. My point with that is, we didn't close the pathway for a kid that was ready for the opportunity from the academy with another import at forward. At the moment, we made sure that he has a pathway into the team. Clearly, fans or people in the know in the history of Red Bull can already ask the question, and rightfully so, yeah, but what about that guy, that guy, that guy, that guy that it didn't work for? And that's true. There's plenty of guys that didn't transfer from the academy to our team or beyond, for whatever those reasons were. But I do have a passion for player development. I have a passion for trying to get it right. And the coolest thing about most of my history, coaching career is better way to say it. Most of my coaching career, I've been in player development. I come from the USHL background, which moves people to the NCAA, then on to the AHL and NHL. That's the basic route. And the coolest thing, we said it all the time, when an agent, when a mom or a dad, or when a player signs an NHL contract or, you know, reaches some sort of dream, they call or you hear about it in an article and they reference their time in your team and what they learned and the opportunity they were given. I hope to create that and see a lot of guys come through the academy in my time in Red Bull and really hopefully coach these young players into their Thomas Raffel age, maybe. Who knows, you know? That's one thing. That really is a goal of mine, that to be part of what we're doing here as long as they'll have me, to be honest. That's the truth. I don't want to get into personal stuff, but I really love being here. I really love being here, and I hope to see these guys grow and keep coaching them and do a good enough job that they want to be coached by me and our staff and stay with us.
I promise to keep this conversation within an hour. Obviously, we just crossed the 1 hour mark, so I'll keep the last set of questions relatively short, but a couple of things that a lot of listeners are also interested in, and we brought up the huge expectations that are being brought to the table when talking about Red Bull. There is Champions Hockey League, there is the League Championship. If you could only have one, what would you go for? Winning a Champions Hockey League or recording a fourth championship in a row?
Fourth championship in a row. The league, were you going to say why? I saw you jump to your microphone there, Martin. I'm ahead of you. Yeah. Day in, day out, you build a season. you're on a roller coaster. You try to be on one that doesn't make you throw up, doesn't make you get sick. You try to be on one that you can ride, a nice train ride, that we consistently build towards a championship. When you fight for something for 9 months compared to a tournament format, even though the ego will say, but man, you'd be champions of Europe. Yeah, that'd be really, really, really cool. And especially because we have to take down the giants of Europe to accomplish something like that. But I don't think there's anything that can compare to the daily grind, the day in, day out work of building and being around a group for 9-10 months. And it culminates with holding a trophy over your head, that playing everybody four times, going city to city, finding your way through the mud and the snow and the everything, and just going and having all that shared experience. That's priceless. The tournament format is very desirable. For example, the idea of a national team, super desirable. Maybe one day to be a part of something like that. But hockey coaching and player building and team building, player development is a daily operation, and you only get that in the season.
Last year, or at the end of last year, word got out that Atte Tolvanen would be applying for Austrian citizenship. I mean, obviously it would help our national team. It would help the roster situation for Red Bull as well. In whose courts is that decision right now? Where's the ball, or the puck for that matter, when it comes to in someone's court?
Yeah, it's definitely not in my court. I'm not the judge. I'm not the lawyer. I'm not the decision maker in this way. What I do know is he is considered, no matter what happens. My latest information that I'm comfortable sharing, really my only information, is he remains an import in the ice in our league, in the Win Today Ice Hockey League, this season, the whole season. So if he gets an Austrian passport, if something changes for him, he's an import for us all year. That's the latest information I have, so it doesn't change anything for our team in the foreseeable future.
Last question. It's a well-known fact that you grew up basically in the shadows of the Hollywood sign in Hollywood. If you were to ever play a role in a big box office movie, what role would you go for? Because I've got one in mind. I'll share mine for you in a little bit, but I want to hear yours first.
Man, I can't even think that fast. I like you mean play myself, or play like a certain type, like a Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible, that kind of thing? Or yeah,
yes.
So I like Jason Bourne. I wish I can do karate kicks like that and that kind of thing. That just comes to my mind fast. Maybe when we're done in 2 days' time, I'm like, man, why did I not think to say this one? But yeah, I don't know. I like cool movies. I like blockbuster movies. I like movies, the ones that are kind of, yeah, not real life, but yeah, cityscapes and traveling around Europe, like Jason Bourne or James Bond, that kind of thing. I'm not saying I think of myself like those guys, but those would be cool movies to be a part of. Big sets and big productions and traveling around the world. That'd be super cool.
You know, as with every great movie, there's going to be a cliffhanger right here. You need to get back on the show at some point during the season, or maybe after the season. If you're a championship winning head coach, you're automatically being brought back.
Big
again.
Pressure.
And then I'll share my role that I kind of envisioned for you with
Man,
you for the moment.
Wow, I gotta wait. That's a huge cliffhanger. That's not like a Netflix cliffhanger.
It is indeed. But I just watched the conclusion of the current season of House of the Dragon, and I'm like, Jesus, I do have to wait for a full year at the very least to get more of that. So yeah, sometimes that's just how life goes.
That's
Coach,
right.
70 minutes out of your valued and esteemed time. So thankful that you jumped onto the show. very glad that we were able to kick off the new season of the Winter Day Hockey O'Clock podcast. Thank you so much for doing this.
Vielen Dank again, Martin. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Winter Day Hockey O'Clock.
Kurz durchatmen bei diesem Wahnsinn. Und das ging rasend schnell. Der Traum vom Finale ist erfüllt. Mittendrin statt nur dabei.
Fans, stimmungsvoll und hoffnungsfroh.
Nice move, another nice move. Oh!